Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings again, everyone. My name is Leona Abraham Brando, and I am the host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Our guest today is Laura Wetzel, who will be continuing her discussion from last Saturday's episode on abuses within the penal system and the urgent need for the media to oversee these prisons. We have been trying to stress over and over again how imperative it is for these prisons, the penal system throughout the country, to have coverage from the outside in order so that people will know for sure what is going on in the prisons. So today we will welcome once again Laura Wetzel. Laura, are you on with us?
Yes, and good evening. Thank you for having me back again.
Thank you for being on with us. Now, Laura, we were discussing last Saturday the abuses within the penal system, and you, as a former incarcerated prisoner with the federal prison who served 14 years in prison, had a lot of experience, and you shared some of it when we first met with you on the show. So if you can just briefly let everyone know once again how you ended up in prison for 14 years, what you experienced, and what your fellow prisoners went through.
Yes, I was convicted of a bank robbery of my second offense, unarmed with a note, and I got a career offender, and I did 14 years. Now, I did all of my time, and part of the reason I did all of my time but 48 days was because of the abuse. The officers enjoy taunting, harassing, demeaning you. They enjoy making fun of you. They enjoy the fact that they can leave the prison and you can't. So they would just totally just be abusive for no reason. They'd cuss you out. They'd holler. They'd scream at you. They'll throw away your stuff even though you didn't do anything. So, of course, you're angry. You come into the system already upset, angry, and then you come into a system where you do not think that they're going to physically abuse you, mentally abuse you, or deny you medications and even food and the outside communication. So I had a very difficult bid, and part of that was because I always stood for the truth. So if the officers would do something to me, I would do something back to their office. And I'm not saying that this was the appropriate way to do time, because it wasn't. But if you look at my history, and in all the programming hours I have, just on program hours alone and my apprenticeship through the Department of Labor, I should have been able to come home. But if you look at all of my incident reports, and they were all on staff, you would think and you would want to look at it and say, wow, what's going on with these staff members? Why is this inmate always in trouble with the staff? I did 14 years without one peer altercation. So that says a little bit of something about my character. They kept me locked up in solitary confinement most of my bid. The first time it was a year straight with a house loan sticker. I went outside that year 5 times, lost over 100 pounds. They just refused to let me out. They denied me my oxygen machine. I had bruises all over my body from no vitamin D. They would give you 7 French fries. I mean, you'd go to bed crying because you were hungry or crying because you were cold. They would refuse to give you blankets, even the mattresses. I mean, anything they could to take away from you, they would do it. They would give you 3 squares of toilet paper and think that it was funny. I went one time for over 3 weeks without taking a shower, brushing my teeth. They would take away simple toiletries, not just from me, but from my peers as well. And I had a lot of peers that were in solitary confinement that passed away. And one of them passed away. She was about 95 pounds, 4 feet 11, and they put a chokehold on her. And she ultimately died right before she went home. And her family is left with no answers. The prison system, I think, is that everybody's talking about the mass incarceration, because it's definitely time and needed. But I think also we need to be aware and say, hey, the media needs to be allowed to go inside federal prisons, state prisons, detention centers, when they had that on about Killeen, Texas, and the immigrants up there, we were in Houston Detention Center, and we were, like, they were living better than what we were living, and we couldn't understand it. They're, you know, they're making a big deal about this, but yet they can't come inside federal prison and say, hey, these inmates shouldn't be living like this. They get good money to house us, to feed us, but yet we're in roach-infested, mice-infested, mold, asbestos, roaches in the food, maggots in the food, and they think it's okay. They just basically laugh about it, and the prison should not have the power to say, you know what, we don't like you, so you're not going home. And ultimately, that is what happened with me. I went to all of the inside fences but one, and I doubled back sometimes more than once to a prison. So my record wasn't good. As soon as I'd get to an institution, they would start to attack me and my character and wouldn't even give me a chance. I'd be on their compound for 4 months, if that, and then they'd ship me again, and they'd laugh and say, you're getting diesel therapy. They didn't like the fact that I could write OIG, Office of Inspector General, Internal Affairs, the White House. They didn't like the fact that they would come and visit me, but yet and still they turned a blind eye to what I was saying. They believed me, but yet they turned a blind eye. And a lot of people looked up to me, staff as well, and said that they could never do what I did. I took a lot of licks, a lot of beatings, a lot of retaliation, and it almost cost me my life. You know, I was on life support at Federal Medical Center Carswell in 2007. They got together and said they didn't want to pay for the life support. So they pulled my plug, and the doctor...
I'd like to intercede for a minute, Laura, because we have J.D. Rutherford on the phone with us as well, who will also briefly tell his story. But what I was going to say is I wanted to say this because I've been working with prisoners throughout the country for years. And one of the things, as you mentioned, whether it be in federal or state prison, these issues go on. And although they're operated all differently, the problems are still the same. The abuses, the deprivations, the provocations, the harassments, the medical, psychological, spiritual neglect, it's all the same. One of the things I hear from, and I know other advocates have heard it, from the employees of the department and also from people in the communities, that prisoners deserve their punishment. If they commit a crime, they have to do the time. But one of the things that they fail to realize is that there are a lot of criminals who are overseers of these prisoners who are doing the exact same thing. They are killing them. They are depriving them. They are doing all these things. And people forget, or they don't want to admit, because these are overseers in uniform, they don't want to admit that there are criminals who are overseeing. And as a result, prisoners who are remorseful of their sin, prisoners who are repented, prisoners who are in for wrongful convictions, prisoners who were driven to crime are the ones that are suffering the most, and they have a reason, many of them do, and I'm sure there's a lot that don't, but these overseers that are doing what they're doing wrong, they should have a better understanding, and they should have a better knowledge of it. They're supposed to be the role models. They deserve to be incarcerated themselves. This is a problem I see around the country. So many people, yeah, law enforcement and guards in the streets and in the communities, are doing so much criminal activity and getting away with it, whereas the people are judging the prisoners, stereotyping all prisoners as being in the same class, and they're doing all of these things with the ignorance of not knowing or not wanting to admit that the overseers are just as criminal-minded. Now, I'd like to, for a brief minute, just have Mr. Rutherford talk a little bit about his situation, and hopefully we can then go back to you, Laura, or we will go back to you. So, J.D., yes, are you on with us now? Hello? Can you hear us? Okay, Laura, we're having a problem with hearing Mr. Rutherford, so why don't you continue on until he can hear us and speak.
Okay, well, you brought up a very valid point. Our overseers that are federal officers, law enforcement officers, whether you're talking about the warden, the associate wardens, or just regular guards, They're all supposed to uphold the policies and the law. And here we have the people that are overseeing us, like you said, they're criminal-minded, and they didn't mind doing it. And they would even tell you that, oh, they're not going to believe you. You're the inmate, and we're always right. And, you know, they would just kind of have that kind of mentality. Like one time I was in the hole again. I did most of my bid in the hole, and my peer in there was saying that she was hungry, and the warden laughed at her. The warden and the associate warden of her medical thought it was funny. So, you know, I stepped to the door and I said, really, that's not funny. I said, we're in here hungry, you know, and they would just walk off like it's like we're supposed to be living like that, like it was okay. Like you said, they're like, okay, you did a crime, so you're going to do it our way. It didn't matter that they had policy and procedures to follow. It didn't matter if you wrote them up. They were going to win, and the majority of the time, they did. But what they didn't like about me is I was still going to write them up. I was still going to do it, no matter what they did to me. I lost my privileges for like 6 years straight, and it was against the law. They didn't want to give me stamps. They locked my account. They wouldn't let me. I couldn't call home. I couldn't mail letters. I couldn't get on the computer. I couldn't go to the store. And they thought that was funny. They really thought that was funny. Or just when the officers would come in and throw away my stuff. You know, they thought that was funny. And the system really needs to be looked at, not only what's going on the inside, but when we come out of prison and there's these programs that are supposed to be in place, well, look what's happening. Look at Kim Kardashian. That man came out, couldn't find a place to live, and went back to prison. So when he comes back out, she's going to help him with rent. And that's great. But what about all the other inmates that came out and that were supposed to be in place, can't help them? Oh, we don't have any more federal money. Oh, we can't help. Oh, you know. And a lot of people aren't workable. I'm not workable right now. And if it wouldn't have been for my church family, my church, my kids, I would not have been able to come out and make it the way I did. You honestly need to have somebody in your corner. Now, the recidivism rate, I can see why that it's so high, because people come out of prison and they cannot find a place to live. They can't find a job like they're promised. They can't meet with probation. I mean, it's a hardship. I had a friend that released, and they sent her to the wrong halfway house. So she got there, and the halfway house said, oh, well, we can't send you right now to where you need to be. So she stayed in her prison clothes for like 3 weeks. It was in the middle of nowhere down in the valley in Texas. So they had no resources, no funds, no clothing, no anything for her. And, you know, ultimately it was other people who got out of prison that helped with the peer that got out. So, yeah, as we're trying to bring media attention to this mass incarceration, hey, let's go inside the prisons and let's talk to people like me and JD and, you know, other inmates releasing and see how hard it was for us.
I believe the media needs to go in not only to talk with the prisoners to find out exactly what's going on, but for prisoners when they're released, maybe to meet with them as they go on to find out what resources who claim or allege that they help with supportive aftercare resources, which ones are actually helping these prisoners. It's like lawyers. Lawyers claim that they are helping, but there are good lawyers, but there are also scam artist lawyers that will take every bit of your money to help in any situation. There's one lawyer in Boston, Zelkine, who charged $4,500 to meet with the prisoner one time, taking a young attorney with him, trying to build up a way in that one visit to take someone's $4,500. Now, the media needs to go into these prisons. They need to talk with these prisoners. They need to find out exactly what's going on with the abuses on the prisons, the deprivations, because the overseers, as I say, the prisoners throughout the country have been abused seriously, many of them, and there is nothing being done because no one really knows what's going on, and they listen to one-sided stories. The media needs to demand to go in because what my understanding is from some media reporters, they're not allowed to go in the prison and talk with the prisoners And if that's the case, they need a demand, because someone in the communities need, the people in the communities need to know what's going on inside. And all of these individuals that they claim, once again, who are experts, when they talk to them on CNN or even in the local television, the news, the media, these experts, many of them have not even met with prisoners. They have talked to the authorities, and it's getting ridiculous because, again, there are so many criminal overseers out there doing much worse, and they're getting away with it because no one expects someone who is supposed to be a role model in uniform to do all the dirt that they are doing.
Yes, and let me say this. Just because you're incarcerated doesn't mean that you're going to tell a lie or that you're a liar. Just because you're incarcerated doesn't mean that you're disease infected. And then also, I mean, it's sad. This isn't an African-American problem. This isn't a Hispanic problem. This isn't a Caucasian problem. This isn't an Asian problem. There's all mixes locked up in prison, and all of us get abused. We're not just one ethnic group getting abused. It's pretty much, if you're incarcerated, you're going to be abused in some form, whether it's physical, verbal, whether it's them throwing away your property or the food. You're going to get some type of abuse. It's not about a color thing. It's about an incarceration thing. And, yes, in my time, I have seen hundreds of inmates that were totally not guilty, incarcerated for next to nothing, first-time offenders, and picked up a phone, and that was it, and they're getting 40 years for picking up somebody's phone and saying hello. I mean, it's ridiculous, the guidelines, the ghost dope. I mean, just things that even get you incarcerated. I stand on this strongly. There should be no federal medical center for men and women. You have 800 inmates waiting for the same doctor. So by the time they decide to give you surgery and go to the board and schedule the surgery, it's a year and a half later. And you're either gone by then or so bad off, your condition changed, that now when it's time for surgery, you end up passing away anyway because the condition got too worse. And then the paperwork that goes into this that gets messed up. I watched one of my Haitian friends. They cut off the wrong leg, and then they had to go back and cut off the right leg, and then she ended up dying. And because of the language barrier, her family probably never knew what happened with her. The media, CNN, you got Van Jones doing things for criminal justice reform. You know, you got Fox News, you got NPR. You know, let's get inside the prisons. Let's go and demand to Congress, hey, we need to know what's going on. Where are our tax dollars going? I mean, we're here in the United States. We're not in a foreign country. We're not in a Nazi camp. But lots of times, and that is what happened inside female and male prisons. I was in two prisons that we were attached with men. And, I mean, it was horrible. You know, they're killing the inmates, and the inmates are killing the staff, and we're always locked down. But it was just simple things like, hey, people want to have a visit. People want to use their phone. You know, people want to go to commissary and shop. And it would be simple things. I went to Houston. I was in Houston right before I came home, and they had a whole stabbing on Father's Day over ice cream. The men had three different types of ice cream, and one man wanted one kind, and he got another kind, and it resulted in a whole stabbing, and we got locked down for it. So, I mean, it's simple things.
Prisoners, when there's a fight breaking out between prisoners that don't have enough sense to try to control things, it affects all the other prisoners. Like you say, you know, if there's someone that's getting locked down over a fight, everybody suffers for that one person. And another thing I realize is that these riots that they have nationwide, when they have hunger strikes, it's because they're trying to get the attention of someone. They're trying to get their message out. They're trying to get their voices heard. And I think it's so unfair that they have to stoop to that level to get the media's attention, because they have to get help some way. It's like cornering a dog in a corner, keeping a dog chained for years, and then letting that dog go, or that dog trying to get free. And unfortunately, they have to be able to get their message out without having to be penalized for it. But this is the only way they do it, is to have these strikes. I realize that because it's happened so many times, and they suffer even more. They get force-fed and everything else. But they're trying to get their voices heard, and I think it's only fair that the PD people try to listen. I wanted to say one real quick thing to the advocates out there that are listening to this interview. I want to let them know that if they can also just press for the media to be more forceful in being involved in the inside prisons, to find out the true stories, to talk to the people themselves, the prisoners themselves. Advocates can do it. I know that they want these things to occur, and their help is needed as well. So I just wanted to stress that. And you can go on, Laura, because I want to listen to hear more about what you experienced and what you feel.
Well, there's some things I want to touch on. Like, I'm a 48-year-old African-American woman. I have multiple health problems, to include a splenic artery aneurysm that I got when the officers beat me twice. And let me tell you, I had on some sneakers the other day with some half pants, and you can see the shackle marks on my legs from where they would keep the shackles on me for days and hours, and they would cut into my skin. So I have them on both my ankles. I have them on my wrists. I have bruises and scars, well, not bruises, but scars from where the officers would beat me with things or push me into cabinets. I mean, I have to look at this trach scar every day I wake up, and as a reminder that, hey, you know, the BOP wanted to pull my life support for the cost like I was a piece of trash. So I look at my body. I look at my flash bomb scar. You know, they did all these things, the flash bombing. I got flash bombed twice in one day, and right before I left out of the system. So I have an 8x8 flash bomb mark. They literally flash bombed me and gas grenaded me. But under their policy, my heart condition alone and all my medical breathing problems, they were not supposed to flash bomb me. And I wasn't doing anything anyway to get flash bombed. And the following week, the whole tactical team started coming into confinement apologizing. Oh, we don't know why the lieutenant made us do that. We're so sorry. You know, you weren't doing anything. We heard about your health. But yet nobody wanted to address it. You know, I'm trying to get something done. I try to talk to post-conviction attorneys. And they're like, oh, my God, you know, we're sorry. But, you know, that's a lot. And you were in multiple jurisdictions. But what I wanted to say is anybody out there listening who has a loved one, who has a family friend, demand that the media be allowed to go inside these prisons. Go to your local network. Go to your local governor. Write Congress. Have a voice. You've got people in there that are being abused. And when they call home to tell you, chances are they're not lying about things and what's going on. My church family and my people, they couldn't even believe it. Because you don't think that you're going to go to prison and get physically abused, beat, starved, can't go outside, can't talk to your loved ones. They don't think that that's going to happen, or they don't think about the drugs. The officers that got fired, that got women pregnant, that are bringing in drugs because they need money too. I mean, it's ridiculous. There really needs to be just more awareness to what's going on inside. And then, like you said, hey, talk to the people who made it out and see what their struggles are, see how they made it. And, you know, let us go to Congress and say, hey, look, this happened. You know, let's pay attention to the people that are getting out in these programs, like you said, that are in place, but yet the proper people aren't getting the funding or getting the help. It's just ridiculous. There's a lot of overhaul that needs to be done, and I think Trump is doing a lot by doing the criminal justice reform and having the advocates out there. But what about the peers that are still inside that don't need to be inside? Or what about the peers when they're getting abused trying to get a lawyer, but because they have no money, they can't. Or they can't use a jailhouse lawyer anymore. you know, what about the peers that came out and then went back to prison? You know, go interview them and find out why they went back, because they couldn't get jobs. Now, not in all cases, but the majority of the cases that I've been hearing or reading about, people came out, couldn't get housing, couldn't get a job. My own situation, I couldn't get housing. They told me I would have to live in a bad part of town in a drug-infested area for a year, and guess where I'm at? In a bad part of town. So,
it was
there
was a prisoner as well in Pennsylvania who was released from prison about a year ago. And although he was from Pennsylvania, his mother was from Pennsylvania. She had moved to North Carolina. She had a home. She passed away about 5 years ago and left the house to her son. Her son, during the time he was in prison and when he came out, he was not allowed to leave the state. It was all in progress. And while that was happening, the house was, the foreclosure went through. He ended up back in prison. He had been drinking, and I guess that was not that was part of his reasoning for being put back in. He's ready to be released again, and this has only been a couple of years, but they have not even helped him to get the resources, to the aftercare resources. But the problem now is he lost the house because for months and months and months he was not allowed to leave the state. And it did go up for foreclosure because the taxes weren't paid or nothing was being done with it.
Yeah.
So these are areas where people they fall, they get those stumbling blocks placed before them, before and after. And again, there's a lot of prisoners, I'm sure, that many people feel should be in prison. But there are a lot of prisoners who are in for mental health issues. There's a lot of them that went in for addictions. And whatever the crime was, it was related to one or the other, or poor association. And these are the things that unfortunately they don't get a chance to talk about.
Yes, and that's why people give up hope. You have to have a strong foundation when you come out, whether it's into a program or assistance or help. You have to have somebody in your corner. And lots of times the probation officers are overwhelmed. They have too many people, and they just don't feel like bothering with you or helping you. And then you know, and I'm not saying that it's right. I'm just saying that it's a fact. If you can't get housing, or they won't even let you in the shelter because it's full and you're trying to comply, lots of times the probation department won't even help you. I've seen it just amongst the women, so I can imagine how the men feel, you know, when they come out and they can't, you know, get a job or take care of their family or their kids or themselves. It's a little bit, you know, different. But it's still the same outcome. You're going to end up doing something to go back. And when I would see my peers come back repeatedly, I would ask them, hey, I'm not trying to be nosy, but can you please tell me why you came back? Because I'm going to be out there one day. And it was pretty much the same thing. They couldn't get housing, had no place to live, couldn't get a job. And I said, I would ask them, even though they have all these jobs for felons, they would say, yeah, they don't want us. Even though we're bonded, and they would say, yeah, but I couldn't get a job. So I would see it time and time again. Family doesn't want to take you in because they're scared you're going to do the same thing. And they kind of want you to see first. They want to see how you're going to do. But in the meantime, people aren't understanding that you're going right back. You're just
prison
going right back.
Many of them are failed. Many people, many resources out there, a lot of them are failed. Many civil rights organizations. Many lawyers, the media, all of these people that can make a big difference, they don't. And unfortunately, Laura, our time is out. So we look forward to having you back next Saturday at the same time and maybe discuss more on this. And I really appreciate your coming on and telling us more about this issue.
Yes, next week we can have JD.
That will be good. That would be good. I don't know if that was him. I do know that someone else was on. But I just want to thank you for being on, Laura. You've been very informative with everyone, and you have been great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and I'll be looking forward to talking to you next week again. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.